think Global Minnesota really serves a role because there is the sheer number of issues that are changing constantly that affect us here in Minnesota are growing, and people know that. And there's just this huge interest in a role that we play as that convener and gathering place.
Welcome to the Global Minnesota Podcast, connecting, informing, and engaging Minnesota with the world. I'm Nicholas Sand, Marketing and Communications Manager for Global Minnesota. Global Minnesota offers a wide range of programs in our mission to advance international understanding and engagement in Minnesota. Our efforts include major public events with international dignitaries, grassroots foreign policy discussion groups, K-12 education programs, international student outreach, and international professional exchanges. Last year alone, our programs featured over 450 activities covering 137 countries, which inspired over 15,000 people to connect with and learn about our changing world. And we're looking to do even more this year. Overseeing all of these various programs is Global Minnesota's Program Director. And on today's episode, I'm joined by our very own Program Director, Aaron Hart. Aaron started as Global Minnesota's Program Director back in January and has already made an impact on our wide-ranging programs and events. Her career spans several tours as a Foreign Service Officer, as well as leadership positions at several nonprofit organizations in Minnesota. She is joined today to talk about her experiences, the various programs under her supervision, and what to expect from Global Minnesota throughout the year. So Aaron, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Nick. Really happy to be here.
So first, why don't you tell us a bit more about yourself and your time in the Foreign Service?
Sure. Oh, that's such a big question. So I'm originally from Duluth, Minnesota, so I am a Minnesotan. But, you know, from an early age, I was interested in the wider world. This might date me a little bit, but I remember when I was in elementary school and the Berlin Wall came down and the Soviet Union dissolved, and I got a new map in my bedroom with all of these new countries. And I would stare at the wall, and I look, and it's funny because I now have a map here in my office that I'm looking at. And I knew that I wanted to travel and discover more about other cultures. And so my 8 years in the Foreign Service were a natural fit for that. I spent most of my time in the Middle East. I served in Afghanistan, Oman, Iraq, and of course, Washington, D.C.
So what are some of the most interesting or exciting stories then from representing your country around the world?
Yeah. And so, you know, Nick, I'm actually glad that we're doing this episode after Susan Filatko's episode, the diplomat in residence for the Midwest, because she really did such an amazing job describing State Department careers and opportunities, both Foreign Service and Civil Service, just to fit myself into the framework that she talked about. I was a Foreign Service Officer in a public diplomacy cone. And so my specialty, or the sort of expertise that I cultivated during my time, was in press and media outreach, cultural programs, and of course, the consular tour that we all have to do, which is visas, visitor visas, American citizen services, and passports. Yeah, I feel like each tour that I did brought such different experiences. One thing I would say about my consular tour, which I did in Baghdad, was, you know, when you enter the Foreign Service, or when you imagine a career in diplomacy, you're not like, wow, I can't wait to interview people for visas. You know, you're sort of picturing your head the negotiations at the foreign ministry or the United Nations. And
yeah, you know, it's the West Wing, you know.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Or now we can watch The Diplomat on Netflix. And so it's funny in retrospect, one of the reasons why I chose to do my consular tour in Baghdad was because it was only a 1-year tour. And ironically, it ended up being one of my favorite tours. Because for my job, I got to talk to people from all over Iraq every day, you know, issuing visas. And I primarily did visitor visas. And so You know, Iraqis are really nice, a great sense of humor. I got to learn just all about different parts of the country, different parts of the economic sector, what was going on in politics. And so I actually, like, you know, if were I ever to do it again, and when I talk to people about the Foreign Service, I actually feel like I want to tell them how much fun it is actually to do a consular tour.
So then you said you went to Oman, right? How was that? Because I feel that Oman is a very underrated country, especially in the Middle East.
I love Oman, and anyone who works here will tell you how much I love Oman. beautiful country, really interesting history. You know, the people have just an amazing culture of hospitality, of warmth. And, well, one story I'll tell you about Oman, about my time there. This is the one time in my Foreign Service career that I was on CNN.
Hey.
Yes. But in the background, looking very stressed. So, so when I was in Oman, it was in, 2011. And, what's, you know, interesting about Oman, and Oman still plays this role today of, you know, being a mediator between, in some respects, in some contexts, between the United States and Iran. So Oman holds a lot of important diplomatic relationships and is known for its quiet diplomacy. So when I was in Oman, within my first few weeks of being there, we got word that two American hikers who had been held in Tehran prison for a couple of years were going to be released from Tehran via Oman. And, you know, the embassy we were supporting, obviously the negotiations that were taking place, but it was going to be their first time, like a media appearance, like they would land at the airport in Oman, their families were there, and it was quite the international media circus, for lack of a better word. A lot of pressure, you know. So my job was to prepare the press conference, to invite press who were there, to manage the international press that descended upon the tiny capital in Muscat, and also to work with Josh and Shane, the two Americans, to do their press conference and issue their first press statement. And it was sort of a stressful situation. It was, you know, really, I felt like in some ways being part of history and at this moment in time, and like on a personal level, to see them be reunited with their families was really satisfying.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I think might be a little underrated about working in the State Department, the Foreign Services. You get to have such a direct impact on so many people's lives, especially people who find themselves in a jam when they're abroad and need the support of the United States government to get home.
You know, maybe I was on CNN one day looking stressed in the background, but you know, American diplomats are doing so much work overseas on behalf of American citizens that is not on the front page of the newspaper, per se.
Yeah. Well, we'll be sure to get the CNN footage up on the website for everyone to view. Excellent. Your nervousness.
Great. So.
Then what other stories? Anything? What was the weirdest thing that happened while you were working specifically on the job?
Yeah, a few things. Here's a moment in Afghanistan. So I was there from the year 2009 to 2010. And this was a very important year. It was during the Obama administration, and the United States and his administration was really trying to put resources, both like financial and actually of civilian personnel and civilian projects, you know, for our partnership with Afghanistan. And, you know, as I was a sort of low level press officer at the time, and we just had so much going on throughout the country. And I was, you know, assigned places all over town to do like a ribbon cutting at this road that was opening, or visit an orphanage, or this construction project. And so one day I was sent to one of Kabul's largest garbage dumps. So a very large landfill and waste facility.
Very prestigious place to go to, yeah.
That the United States, you know, was supporting. I mean, obviously, like, you know, something like trash removal is not really the cutting edge of what you would think when you're thinking about, you know, progress. But, you know, but trash removal is very important when you're looking at, like, the legitimacy of government and government services. It's very noticeable if it doesn't happen. And so I spent the day in a sweltering heat at basically a landfill, a garbage dump. And there were, when I came back to the, and it was a great event. The Afghan press showed up. It got good press coverage. But when I came back to the office, I sort of cleared the room because just of where I had spent my time that day. And so my colleagues and I used to joke after that that, you know, as we assigned different thematic portfolios in our office, I had the garbage portfolio.
Well, you really got the full range of experiences there, from bringing people home to, you know, working with trash. So.
Yes. Yes.
All very important things, though.
Yes.
So then fast forward a few years, you spent a few months here at Global Minnesota. How has that been? And I guess what surprised you the most when you started working here?
Yeah. So when I moved back to Minnesota and I had left the State Department, I was looking to transition into nonprofit work. And one of the first organizations I looked up when I moved here was Global Minnesota. I knew I wanted to stay connected to international affairs, to foreign affairs, foreign policy. And yeah, I went to a talk I think within a month after moving here on sectarianism in the Middle East, delivered by Mary Curtin, who was a diplomat in residence at the Humphrey School. And so, you know, sort of life takes over, people have kids, you know, and I got sort of busy. And one thing I took away from Global Minnesota and what I thought the organization did was foreign policy talks. And that was sort of the bucket that I put. And I think a lot of people know us for our public events. Yeah. But the longer I stayed in Minnesota, and particularly after being here for 3 months, is just this amazing breadth of programs that we do. The K-12 education programs, the classroom visits that our colleague Sylvia organizes, the international student engagement that we do with my colleague Joe. Also, the International Visitor Leadership Program, our professional delegations from the State Department, which I had the honor, pleasure of organizing from Oman, from our embassy there. I didn't know that we did that at the time. And I think Global Minnesota just does amazing work on all these fronts. And sometimes I marvel at just how much we do with the resources we have.
Yeah, and it's a lot for you to oversee just immediately, because you're looking at all of those things, aren't you? The public events, K-12, international student, IVOP, professional exchanges, we should say. It's a lot to take in. How are you kind of managing it these first couple of months? How's that been going?
It's funny. It's a little cliche to say that, you know, when you start something new, it's like drinking from a fire hose. But in some respects, it was. You know, I feel like it was a coming home for me in many respects to international affairs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just getting a sense of the roles that people play here, all of our partners. You know, I feel like the work done by my predecessor, Tim Odegaard, you know, it was just really amazing work to be able to build off of now. The relationships he cultivated, the way that he, you know, steered this organization and our programs through COVID and post-pandemic. So I feel like we just have this tremendous amount of momentum going for us. You know, so many of our events are well attended, not over attended, that's not such a thing, but, you know, at capacity. Yeah. And that, I think Global Minnesota really serves a role because there is the sheer number of issues that are changing constantly that affect us here in Minnesota are growing, and people know that. And there's just this huge interest in a role that we play as that convener and gathering place.
Yeah. And that is what we're all about, is trying to be that gathering place, that global community that people can rely on to learn more about the world.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like, you know, when I close my laptop at the end of the day, like, I could just keep going because there is a lot of balls in the air, a lot of programs. We always want to be able to do more and be everywhere at once. You know, it's like foreign policy, the world never sleeps, you know, in some respects. So yeah, we're not bored here.
Yeah, certainly not. So speaking of which, then what's coming up at Global Minnesota? You know, what do you want people to be aware of, to look forward to?
So many things. We have had, you know, an extremely busy April on all fronts. So we're recording this episode right in the middle of April. On the professional delegation side, we have six delegations this month, which is just a really big program load for that State Department program, which, you know, just speaks to the wonderful resources here in Minnesota. We have Fiona Hill coming tomorrow to Minnesota. So I think when this airs, we will have hosted Fiona Hill, who is just, you know, what a remarkable person, remarkable foreign policy expert. And I cannot wait for her talk. So hopefully people can listen to that. You know, we are lucky here to be able to host a lot of foreign dignitaries when they come, like you said. The ambassador of Uzbekistan will be here at the beginning of May, so we're busy programming that visit. Mm-hmm. Uzbekistan is a very fascinating country. I used to work in the Bureau of South and Central Asian Affairs at the State Department, and so I was excited to connect with some former colleagues as we looked at programming that visit. Our gala, obviously, on May 18th is going to be a great celebration of all things international under the theme Come Sail Away. But yeah, I think we are looking forward to, you know, in the months ahead and the upcoming year, taking some programs like our Great Decisions program, the you know, foreign policy grassroots discussion groups that we do throughout the state, and, you know, connecting that to some of our larger programs, looking at doing a larger conference at some point in the near future where we can really bring people together for invaluable discussions and networking. And then our Classroom Connections program has grown outside of the Twin Cities metro area. Mm. We've had a few classroom visits already in Mankato, which is just really exciting to be able to reach new young people and new teachers and new school systems.
Yeah, for me personally, it's been a very exciting time because I'm seeing this growth and these transitions to expand throughout the rest of the state of Minnesota. And it's really encouraging to see just how many people really care about what's going on and how many people want to join and be a part of this community.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that's been really satisfying to me is seeing who reaches out to us, like new member, you know, people who have moved to Minnesota, people who are visiting Minnesota. And I feel like Global Minnesota has a little bit of this gravitational pull for people. And so it's been really rewarding and fun to help people connect the dots and be connected to countries, programs, and issues that they care about.
Well, circling back on your previous career, what advice would you have for people who are curious about becoming a foreign service officer? I mean, of course, the first answer is listen to the last podcast episode with Susan Falatko to learn all about how to become a foreign service officer. But what advice do you have?
After you listen to Nick's podcast with Susan Falatko, you know, one thing that I found really helpful to me is I actually talked to some people who were in the Foreign Service. So that is what first got me hooked. I was living in Berlin, Germany after college, working at a transatlantic relations nonprofit. And I met some diplomats at a conference who were visiting from the U.S. mission to NATO in Brussels. And that, I mean, just our conversation sort of blew my mind. The issues that they got to work on, the fact that instead of taking out loans to learn a foreign language, they were getting paid to learn foreign languages. I know. The Foreign Service is a really rewarding career, and it also comes with challenges. you know, moving every 2 or 3 years, you know, seeking employment for family members, for spouses overseas, you know, doing transitions with family and family back here in the United States. But I think conversations really help with, you know, demystifying what the Foreign Service is and what the State Department does.
Yeah, because the big takeaway I had in speaking with Susan was just how accessible it is to a wide variety of different people at different points in their lives.
And what really sealed the deal for me was I did an internship at the State Department. So I was in graduate school, and that summer between my first and second year, I was able to do an internship in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor. And I worked on Pakistan and Sri Lanka, and, you know, it just felt very, almost, I was just in awe of the work that my colleagues were doing on very important issues. And sort of the highlight of that summer was my boss asked me, there was some developments in Sri Lanka with some conflict going on there. And my boss asked me to write a memo to the Secretary of State.
Ooh.
Called an info memo, an informational memo. Hmm. So just to let the secretary know what was going on. And so, you know, I went back to my desk. I basically had a panic attack. But, you know, I had read up and done things that summer. And then being able to take place in the foreign policy discussion within the Bureau. So, you know, I write this memo. It's obviously from the perspective of the Bureau I was in, Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor. But then I had to get my language and approach to the memo approved, cleared, and edited by all of these different equities within the State Department, within the building. So the regional bureau, the deputy for the deputy secretary of state. And so, you know, it takes a while and things are changed. But eventually my memo did make it to the secretary of state. There was like a little initials on it. And I was just hooked from there.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I guess bringing it all together, do you think that those types of experiences have helped in your current position now? You know, how has that kind of prepared you for this?
Yeah. Oh, I would love to write more memos, but, yeah. You know, we are a different organization. We're efficient and nimble. But no, I think, you know, in some respects, the, you know, a lot of the programs that we do have changing logistics, changing priorities, protocol. I think it was great training for the job that I do now. You know, at the same time, we are a nonprofit, and so I feel like the role that we have in the community is different than the federal government. But I feel like, in a lot of respects, that this job and this organization brings the best of both of those worlds, because we have the adaptability, the flexibility, the responsiveness of a nonprofit, and we have the expertise, the connections, and the breadth of a, you know, really robust foreign affairs agency. And I would also like to say that, you know, we really appreciate our members and volunteers who help so much with our programs, from dinner hosting for our professional delegations to meeting with community resources. We just had a group from Kazakhstan go visit the port in Duluth for like just an amazing, very strategically important project to that country. And so, yeah, we just really appreciate our community members who help us do the work, and encourage people to reach out to me, to anyone on our team with ideas that you have for programs or feedback that you have. We really care about the interests and priorities of the people that we serve.
Yeah. There's so many different ways to get involved, not just with becoming a member, which, you know, of course you all should do, but there's ways to volunteer, there's ways to connect with us, there's ways to, as you said, be a part of the programming that we're offering. Because every day, even I'm still learning more and more about some of the things that we do. It's pretty remarkable, and it's only going to get bigger as we go on.
Right. And we have paid internships, like the State Department.
Well, Erin, thank you so much for joining and for all the work that you've done in the Foreign Service and then, of course, at Global Minnesota as well.
Thanks so much, Nick.
And that's all the time we have today. Thanks again to Aaron for joining, and congratulations again on joining the Global Minnesota team. Thanks as always to all the members of Global Minnesota who make our programs possible. Be sure to check out our website at globalminnesota.org to find information about upcoming events, learn more about our international programs, and sign up for our weekly newsletters. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already, so you can hear untold stories of international connections each month and catch recordings of our public events. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.